Chapter 11. So severe. Apostrophe Edward, apostrophe said Miss Murdstone, again, let there be an end of this. I go tomorrow. Apostrophe Jane Murdstone, apostrophe thundered Mr. Murdstone. Will you be silent? How dare you? Apostrophe apostrophe, Miss Murdstone made a jail delivery of her pocket handkerchief, and held it before her eyes. Clara, apostrophe he continued, looking at my mother, you surprise me. You astound me. Yes, I had a satisfaction in the thought of marrying an inexperienced and artless person, and forming her character, and infusing into it some amount of that firmness and decision, of which it stood in need. But when Jane Murdstone is kind enough to come to my assistance in this endeavor, and to assume, for my sake, a condition something like a housekeeper's, and when she meets with a base return apostrophe, oh, pray, pray, Edward, apostrophe cried my mother, don't accuse me of being ungrateful. I am sure I am not ungrateful. No one ever said I was before. I have many faults, but not that. Oh, don't, my dear. Apostrophe apostrophe, when Jane Murdstone meets, I say, apostrophe he went on, after waiting until my mother was silent, with a base return, that feeling of mine is chilled and altered. Apostrophe, don't, my love, say that. Apostrophe apostrophe implored my mother very piteously. Oh, don't, Edward. I can't bear to hear it. Whatever I am affectionate. I know I am affectionate. I wouldn't say it, if I wasn't sure that I am. Ask Peggotty. I am sure she'll tell you I'm affectionate. Apostrophe, there is no extent of mere weakness. Clara, apostrophe said Mr. Murdstone in reply, that can have the least weight with me. You lose breath. Apostrophe, pray let us be friends. Apostrophe said my mother, I couldn't live under coldness or unkindness. I am so sorry. I have a great many defects, I know, and it's very good of you, Edward, with your strength of mind, to endeavor to correct them for me. Jane, I don't object to anything. I should be quite broken-hearted if you thought of leaving apostrophe my mother was too much overcome to go on. Jane Murdstone, apostrophe said Mr. Murdstone to his sister, any harsh words between us are, I hope, uncommon. It is not my fault that so unusual an occurrence has taken place tonight. I was betrayed into it by another. Nor is it your fault. You were betrayed into it by another. Let us both try to forget it. And as this, apostrophe he added, after these magnanimous words, is not a fit scene for the boy David, go to bed. Apostrophe apostrophe, I could hardly find the door, through the tears that stood in my eyes. I was so sorry for my mother's distress, but I groped my way out, and groped my way up to my room in the dark, without even having the heart to say goodnight to Peggotty, or to get a candle from her. When her coming up to look for me, an hour or so afterwards, awoke me, she said that my mother had gone to bed poorly, and that Mr. and Miss Murdstone were sitting alone. Going down next morning rather earlier than usual, I paused outside the parlor door, on hearing my mother's voice. She was very earnestly and humbly entreating Miss Murdstone's pardon, which that lady granted, and a perfect reconciliation took place. I never knew my mother afterwards to give an opinion on any matter without first appealing to Miss Murdstone, or without having first ascertained by some sure means what Miss Murdstone's opinion was, and I never saw Miss Murdstone, when out of temper she was infirm that way, move her hand towards her bag, as if she were going to take out the keys and offer to resign them to my mother, without seeing that my mother was in a terrible fright. The gloomy taint that was in the Murdstone blood darkened the Murdstone religion, which was austere and wrathful. I have thought, since, that its assuming that character was a necessary consequence of Mr. Murdstone's firmness, which wouldn't allow him to let anybody off from the utmost weight of the severest penalties he could find any excuse for. Be this as it may, I well remember the tremendous visages with which we used to go to church, and the changed air of the place. Again, the dreaded Sunday comes round, and I file into the old pew first, like a guarded captive brought to a condemned service. Again, Miss Murdstone, in a black velvet gown, that looks as if it had been made out of a pall, follows close upon me, then my mother, then her husband. There is no Peggotty now, as in the old time. Again, I listen to Miss Murdstone mumbling the responses, and emphasizing all the dread words with a cruel relish. Again, I see her dark eyes roll round the church, when she says miserable sinners, as if she were calling all the congregation names. Again, I catch rare glimpses of my mother, moving her lips timidly between the two, with one of them muttering at each ear like low thunder. Again, I wonder with a sudden fear, whether it is likely that our good old clergyman can be wrong, and Mr. and Miss Murdstone right, and that all the angels in heaven can be destroying angels. Again, if I move a finger, or relax a muscle of my face, Miss Murdstone pokes me with her prayer book, and makes my side ache. Yes, and again, as we walk home, I note some neighbors looking at my mother and at me, and whispering. Again, as the three go on arm in arm, and I linger behind alone, I follow some of those looks, and wonder if my mother's step be really not so light as I have seen it, and if the gaiety of her beauty be really almost worried away. Again, I wonder whether any of the neighbors call to mind, as I do, how we used to walk home together, she and I wonder stupidly about that, all the dreary dismal day. There had been some talk on occasions of my going to boarding school. Mr. and Miss Murdstone had originated it, and my mother had of course agreed with them. Nothing, however, was concluded on the subject yet. In the meantime, I learned lessons at home. Shall I ever forget those lessons? They were presided over nominally by my mother, but really by Mr. Murdstone and his sister, who were always present, and found them a favorable occasion for giving my mother lessons in that miscalled firmness, which was the bane of both our lives. I believe I was kept at home for that purpose. I had been apt enough to learn, and willing enough, when my mother and I had lived alone together. I can faintly remember learning the alphabet at her knee. To this day, when I look upon the fat black letters in the primer, the puzzling novelty of their shapes, and the easy good nature of O and Q and S, seem to present themselves again before me as they used to do. But they recall no feeling of disgust or reluctance. On the contrary, I seem to have walked along a path of flowers as far as the crocodile book, and to have been cheered by the gentleness of my mother's voice and manner all the way. But these solemn lessons which succeeded those, I remember as the death blow of my peace, and a grievous daily drudgery and misery. They were very long, very numerous, very hard, perfectly unintelligible, some of them, to me, and I was generally as much bewildered by them as I believe my poor mother was herself. Let me remember how it used to be, and bring one morning back again. I come into the second best parlor after breakfast, with my books, and an exercise book, and a slate. My mother is ready for me at her writing desk, but not half so ready as Mr. Murdstone in his easy chair by the window, though he pretends to be reading a book, or as Miss Murdstone, sitting near my mother stringing steel beads. The very sight of these two has such an influence over me that I begin to feel the words I have been at infinite pains to get into my head, all sliding away, and going I don't know where. I wonder where they do go, by the by. I hand the first book to my mother. Perhaps it is a grammar, perhaps a history, or geography. I take a last drowning look at the page as I give it into her hand, and start off aloud at a racing pace, while I have got it fresh. I trip over a word. Mr. Murdstone looks up. I trip over another word. Miss Murdstone looks up. I redden, tumble over half a dozen words, and stop. I think my mother would show me the book if she dared, but she does not dare, and she says softly, "Oh, Davy, Davy. Apostrophe, apostrophe, now, Clara, apostrophe," says Mr. Murdstone, "be firm with the boy. Don't say, 'Oh, Davy, Davy.' That's childish." He knows his lesson, or he does not know it. Apostrophe, he does not know it. Apostrophe, Miss Murdstone interposes awfully. I am really afraid he does not. Apostrophe, says my mother. Then, you see, Clara, apostrophe, returns Miss Murdstone, you should just give him the book back, and make him know it. Apostrophe, yes, certainly, apostrophe, says my mother, that is what I intend to do, my dear Jane. Now, Davy, try once more, and don't be stupid. Apostrophe, I obey the first clause of the injunction by trying once more, but am not so successful with the second, for I am very stupid. I tumble down before I get to the old place, at a point where I was all right before, and stop to think. But I can't think about the lesson. I think of the number of yards of net in Miss Murdstone's cap, or of the price of Mr. Murdstone's dressing gown, or any such ridiculous problem that I have no business with, and don't want to have anything at all to do with. Mr. Murdstone makes a movement of impatience which I have been expecting for a long time. Miss Murdstone does the same. My mother glances submissively at them, shuts the book, and lays it by as an arrear, to be worked out when my other tasks are done. There is a pile of these arrears very soon, and it swells like a rolling snowball. The bigger it gets, the more stupid I get. The case is so hopeless, and I feel that I am wallowing in such a bog of nonsense, that I give up all idea of getting out, and abandon myself to my fate. The despairing way in which my mother and I look at each other, as I blunder on, is truly melancholy. But the greatest effect in these miserable lessons is when my mother, thinking nobody is observing her, tries to give me the cue by the motion of her lips. At that instant, Miss Murdstone, who has been lying in wait for nothing else all along, says in a deep warning voice, Clara, apostrophe apostrophe, my mother starts, colors, and smiles faintly. Mr. Murdstone comes out of his chair, takes the book, throws it at me, or boxes my ears with it, and turns me out of the room by the shoulders. Even when the lessons are done, the worst is yet to happen, in the shape of an appalling sum. This is invented for me, and delivered to me orally by Mr. Murdstone, and begins, if I go into a cheesemonger's shop, and buy 5,000 double Gloucester cheeses at 4p halfpenny each, present payment at which I see Miss Murdstone secretly overjoyed. I pore over these cheeses without any result or enlightenment until dinner time, when, having made a mulatto of myself, by getting the dirt of the slate into the pores of my skin, I have a slice of bread to help me out with the cheeses, and am considered in disgrace for the rest of the evening. It seems to me, at this distance of time, as if my unfortunate studies generally took this course. I could have done very well if I had been without the Murdstones, but the influence of the Murdstones upon me was like the fascination of two snakes on a wretched young bird. Even when I did get through the morning with tolerable credit, there was not much gained but dinner, for Miss Murdstone never could endure to see me unasked, and if I rashly made any show of being unemployed, called her brother's attention to me by saying, Clara, my dear, there's nothing like work, give your boy an exercise, which caused me to be clapped down to some new labor, there and then. As to any recreation with other children of my age, I had very little of that, for the gloomy theology of the Murdstones made all children out to be a swarm of little vipers, though there was a child once set in the midst of the disciples, and held that they contaminated one another. The natural result of this treatment, continued, I suppose, for some 6 months or more, was to make me sullen, dull, and dogged. I was not made the less so by my sense of being daily more and more shut out and alienated from my mother. I believe I should have been almost stupefied, but for one circumstance. It was this. My father had left a small collection of books in a little room upstairs, to which I had access, for it adjoined my own, and which nobody else in our house ever troubled. From that blessed little room, Roderick Random, Peregrine Pickle, Humphrey Clinker, Tom Jones, the Vicar of Wakefield, Don Quixote, Gil Blas, and Robinson Crusoe came out, a glorious host, to keep me company. They kept alive my fancy, and my hope of something beyond that place and time. They, and the Arabian Nights, and the tales of the genii, and did me no harm. For whatever harm was in some of them was not there for me. I knew nothing of it. It is astonishing to me now, how I found time, in the midst of my porings and blunderings over heavier themes, to read those books as I did. It is curious to me, how I could ever have consoled myself under my small troubles, which were great troubles to me, by impersonating my favorite characters in them as I did, and by putting Mr. and Miss Murdstone into all the bad ones which I did too. I have been Tom Jones, a child's Tom Jones, a harmless creature, for a week together. I have sustained my own idea of Roderick Random for a month at a stretch, I verily believe. I had a greedy relish for a few volumes of Voyages and Travels I forget what, now that were on those shelves, and for days and days I can remember to have gone about my region of our house, armed with the centerpiece out of an old set of boot trees, the perfect realization of Captain Somebody, of the Royal British Navy, in danger of being beset by savages, and resolved to sell his life at a great price. The captain never lost dignity, from having his ears boxed with the Latin grammar. I did. But the captain was a captain and a hero, in despite of all the grammars of all the languages in the world, dead or alive. This was my only, and my constant comfort. When I think of it, the picture always rises in my mind, of a summer evening, the boys at play in the churchyard, and I sitting on my bed, reading as if for life. Every barn in the neighborhood, every stone in the church, and every foot of the churchyard, had some association of its own, in my mind, connected with these books, and stood for some locality made famous in them. I have seen Tom Pipes go climbing up the church steeple. I have watched Strap, with the knapsack on his back, stopping to rest himself upon the wicket gate. And I know that Commodore Trunnion held that club with Mr. Pickle, in the parlor of our little village alehouse. The reader now understands, as well as I do, what I was when I came to that point of my youthful history to which I am now coming again. One morning when I went into the parlor with my books, I found my mother looking anxious, Miss Murdstone looking firm, and Mr. Murdstone binding something round the bottom of a cane, a lithe and limber cane, which he left off binding when I came in, and poised and switched in the air. I tell you, Clara, apostrophe said Mr. Murdstone, I have been often flogged myself. Apostrophe, to be sure. Of course, apostrophe said Miss Murdstone. Certainly, my dear Jane, apostrophe faltered my mother, meekly. But do you think it did Edward good? Apostrophe, do you think it did Edward harm, Clara? Apostrophe asked Mr. Murdstone, gravely. That's the point, apostrophe said his sister. To this my mother returned, certainly, my dear Jane, apostrophe and said no more. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.